Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for tuning in to the marvelous Jesse and Chris. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Chris.
And we're here to talk to you about comics and junk. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing great. We are definitely here to talk about comics, but also junk. I mean, that was my next idea for a podcast, Jesse. We were just going to talk about junk.
Just the two of us rambling for an hour?
Yeah. Ooh.
I doubt many people would listen to us. I mean, we already do a little bit of rambling as it is.
Pretty much.
Unguided rambling sounds bad, but we're going to start with a little bit of organization and questions. Chris had a couple of people here. We'll go ahead and start off with him.
Kevin asks, what could Jubilee do to become your favorite character? Or I think he even said become good, which isn't fair. I think Jubilee's fine. I just don't like her as a vampire because I didn't like a whole lot of M-Day stuff. So when they took away Jubilee's powers and then decided to later make her a vampire and give her a kid, I was like, eh. I don't mind her kid. That's fine. And it's cool that she's doing that. But the vampire stuff, I'm kind of meh about. So that is what could happen with Jubilee. Jubilee, I think, was best in the 90s. I think that was where Jubilee really shined. And sometimes I think she's a lady outside of her time. Speaking of shining in the 90s, Jesse, the next question is also from Kevin. It is, what happened to Spawn and why has his popularity waned? And I guess I've never been the biggest Spawn fan, so I would mainly have to kind of address this from speculation. But I think that Spawn was really just popular because of the 90s. He was just everything about the 90s. He was dark and edgy and demonic, but also somehow a hero. And it was Todd McFarlane, so everybody was like, oh man, Todd McFarlane. And his cape, like, was everywhere. And, you know, he just kind of looked scary. He was like, if you were 14 years old in a comic book store, you were like, oh man, Spawn. I'm getting adult comics now. And I don't know. I just don't, like, there's... Spawn just isn't a 2000s / 2010s type of character, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like Spawn is a lot to the 90s what Deadpool is to comic fans now, where he's kind of zany, he's crazy, he's not really, nobody else is really doing what Deadpool is doing, and, you know, he kills people and laughs and has a fun time, he's very random, which... You know, that's what the kids these days are all about, being random and zany.
So random, Jesse. So random.
So random. Yeah. That phrase. But yeah, and then I agree wholeheartedly. Spawn isn't popular anymore because what he represents isn't popular anymore. It's no longer the mainstream thing to be dark and edgy.
Yeah. I'm looking at a picture of Spawn, and I think he has a 12-pack. I'm not even sure, like, there's that many muscles there.
That sounds like early McFarlane art for sure.
Like, right.
Extra muscles everywhere.
Just so many muscles. What's really funny to me, though, is that, what is it, Angela was originally a Spawn character, and now she's in the Marvel Universe due to reasons.
Right, and Spawn never existed. Like, that's a whole separate thing.
She just showed up. And then she's Angela. But yeah, I just think that's it. And it's not, and Spawn hasn't adapted, and I don't think Spawn's timeless. Like Spider-Man to some extent is timeless. He has like a core concept that doesn't change. And it doesn't need to change. You know, you can always have your sort of down on his luck, sarcastic, like spit in your eye hero. Like that always works. Which is interesting because, you know, Batman's kind of serious. But I don't know. There can always, like, people have always loved kind of like the hard-boiled crime stories or like the noir type of stories. But I think just like the art style and hyper-violence and stuff that Spawn really had just is not in vogue. And there's like, I don't even know, like, if you rebooted Spawn, I have no idea what you would do to him today to make him sort of like, the thing today. Spawn breaks the fourth wall. He has he carries a head of himself.
I might read issue one of that if I'm being honest.
And then burn it.
just throw that piece of garbage away. Well, speaking of garbage, we'll go a little out of order on the questions, because that's a great segue into Cody Sandusky's question. Which Spider-Man storyline / one-off do you believe to be worse, One More Day or Rain? And now, I actually haven't read Rain. Chris actually wasted the last hour of his life reading both of them. So, Chris, what do you think? Which one is worse?
First of all, Cody Sandusky, this is for you, man. I'm not even sure I know you, but I literally spent an hour reading both of these stories. Like, that's just what I did for the last hour. I guzzled dinner, and I read those awful, awful stories. I put delicious food in me and then just garbage. But it's all for you, Cody Sandusky. It's all for you. And which one is more terrible? So to those of you who don't know, who don't know these stories, Spider-Man Rain was an attempt at sort of doing a Dark Knight Returns with Spider-Man. The same guy drew it and wrote it, and I hate the art. I think it's not good. But here's, like, the writing is, it's like trying to be the Dark Knight Returns. It really is. However, it was published in 2006. It wasn't a good time for it. And so the story is that J. Jonah Jameson is trying to get Spider-Man back to being Spider-Man, but Spider-Man's all sad because Mary Jane Watson died. However, this is the reason. Let me tell you, dear listeners, this next bit's going to be a little explicit.
Oh, God.
But Mary Jane Watson was killed by Spider-Man's radioactive jizz. He says it not quite literally that, but enough so that you get it. He says, "I'm radioactive. My blood is radioactive, but not just my blood. All my fluids." Literally the word fluids is used.
Fluids. Yep.
And was it touching me, loving me? It killed her, or something like that. And it's... what? I almost wanted to stop reading right there, but I continued, and it just got worse. It turns out, like, Venom's behind everything and is, like, taking over the city to try to turn it fascist. There's kind of the only thing that's kind of good about it is there's a neat duality between when Spider-Man's the old man, he's like a total wash up and he's like a weakling, but when he's Spider-Man, he's suddenly quippy again, but the quips are bad. So that's Spider-Man Rain. Now, One More Day, Amazing Spider-Man One More Day, the end of Civil War, because Peter Parker gave away his identity as Peter Parker, which was a really big deal. A sniper like tried to shoot at him in a hotel room, and he jumped out of the way, but it hit Aunt May. So One More Day starts as Aunt May is dying in a hospital. And Spider-Man's trying to find a way to save her. So in the first issue, he goes and finds Iron Man and tries to get Iron Man to give him money. And he beats the crap out of Iron Man. And Iron Man gives him money because he feels bad, I guess. But it's not enough because money doesn't solve all your problems. And so they're basically like, oh, this $1 million will really help make her comfortable for the last hours of her life. And Spider-Man's like, wait, what? And they're like, oh, yeah, she's totally going to die anyway. And so the next issue, he tries to go find Doctor Strange so Doctor Strange can, like, magically heal her. But Doctor Strange is like, there's some things magic can't do. And then he kind of goes into, like, this other realm and eventually talks to Mephisto, who is effectively the Satan of the Marvel Universe. And Mephisto gives him a deal, which is, I will have Aunt May live, but your marriage never existed. You and Mary Jane's marriage never, ever existed. And at this point, they had been married for a long time. I think since the 80s? Maybe the 90s.
I think that happened in the 90s, because I don't think that happened in the Silver Age.
Well, 80s is technically Bronze Age, Jesse. But,
oh, yeah.
But I think you're right. I think it did happen in the 90s. Which, I mean, that would, like, I think One More Day happened in, like, 05 or something. So, I mean, that had been, like, a... you know, at least 10 years or so. And so it's 87, Jesse.
Okay. So, yeah.
Yep.
So right, it'd have been a while, because it was actually, that would make it exactly 20 years. The One More Day issue finished, or started rather, in 2007.
Perfect. Strangely enough, Rain was 2006 to 2007.
I know. Yeah.
That was a bad time to be a Spider-Man fan.
And I did read One More Day only because it was listed as one of the quintessential Spider-Man stories when I was jumping back into Spider-Man a couple of years ago.
I know you kept, I literally just like wikied it and was like, cool, I don't have to read this. But I get it. It's like you have to read it in the same way that you have to read, I don't know. There's like
book
like,
four of Game of Thrones. Like
I like book four of Game of Thrones. I mean, that's for a different podcast. But there, it's like sometimes you have to read something just to know it, even it's if fair. It's terrible.
Okay, I guess I should say certain segments, certain point of views from book four. But either way, yeah, different podcast. And then going back to Rain real quick and it being the Dark Knight, was there not an homage to it? I think like a character, I want to say Miller Jansen.
Miller Jansen, yeah. That was heavy handed.
Yeah, it's they definitely did not try to conceal the fact that it was their take or their attempt at the Dark Knight Returns. It the was very obvious.
Like, oh, it's so obvious. Spider-Man's like holding a gravestone and like with his head down, and you're like, ugh. So One More Day eventually ends with MJ and Spider-Man being like, yeah, he can undo our marriage, but we'll still get married again because we love each other and it transcends gods and devils and everything. And then it ends like Spider-Man wakes up and he's like, gotta go, Aunt May. And then someone's like, how was that breakup with MJ? And he's like, not good. And then it's like, and then it ends with to a brand new day. And then Brand New Day started after that, which Brand New Day was a time I was reading Spider-Man a lot. It was three Amazing Spider-Mans a month. And it was all like Spider-Man single again. Let's do single stories. It kind of had its hits and misses. So I guess which one is more terrible? I mean, the retconning of the marriage is awful. I don't care if people think that Spider-Man single stories are more relatable, because I don't know. That's just not something I care about. If a story's good, it's good. And plus, at that point in time, Ultimate Spider-Man was happening, and so was Marvel Adventure Spider-Man, which Marvel Adventure Spider-Man was like the all ages Spider-Man title, both of which had young Spider-Man doing Spider-Man stuff.
So why even try to make Amazing Spider-Man the same way?
It's like the constant problem of comics, which is that if something happens, it doesn't stay. You know, it always goes back. Like, people don't always look forward; they're really looking back. Like, we know that at some point, Odin's son is going to be Thor again.
Right.
We know at some point Steve Rogers is going to be Captain America again, because that's just not the way that comics work. And that's, I feel like that's what they were doing there. They were like, man, we really screwed the pooch by letting Spider-Man evolve as a character. Better go back. So
I just really like that we screwed the pooch by evolving a character.
Right.
That's great.
I guess the question is, which one is worse? And that's really tough. Rain. Okay, if these two stories both were self-contained, I'd say Rain was worse. It was just a piece of garbage. The art was bad. It had lots of reused faces. I don't even think there was character development in it, considering it was supposed to kind of be about character development, about like the rediscovering of your past, the way that Dark Knight was. It just doesn't do it like Dark Knight does it. But I think I have to agree that One More Day is worse, just based on the fact that it affected so heavily comics after it. And I'm not saying that there haven't been good Spider-Man comics after One More Day, because that's simply not true. Superior Spider-Man's really cool. I think Amazing's been doing just fine recently. And I didn't mind all of Brand New Day. I thought some of it was perfectly fine. Granted, I was kind of a younger guy with less refined taste at the time. So if I read it again, I might think it's bad, but I thought some of it was fine. But it did so much. When I read Rain, I was like, no, this is worse. I have to say this is worse. But upon thinking about it, I think that One More Day has to be worse just based on what it affects.
Right, since it completely retconned like everything plot development for Spider-Man. Well, not everything. 90% of Spider-Man's plot development was retconned, you know, up to that issue. And that's just, yeah, it was a bad book that changed so much. Like, it left its mark on top of being a bad book.
What's interesting is I think that if it would have had a different ending, it might have been fine. It's just that I think it was just, ugh. And the guy who wrote it apparently had to do that. And he was kind of dissatisfied with it. That's J. Michael Straczynski. He was really dissatisfied with the way that it ended, but it was like editorially mandated or something.
Oh, yeah. One of those things like this is the direction we're taking with Spider-Man.
Right. Ugh. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that's icky. Speaking of Spider-Man, Jesse, I think we have the most important Spider-Man question we've ever gotten.
Yes, we do. Justin Dombach asks, how do I shot web? Now, my response to that, Justin, you should not be asking how, you should be asking why. And when you can answer the question, why do I shot web, I will tell you, how do I shot web?
I don't know if he'll ever get that, if he'll ever be able to answer that. I hope that keeps him up at night.
I also hope it keeps him up at night. Hopefully he's at least somewhat satisfied with the question. we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. So the next question I got from Diana. Diana asks me to explain why Ant-Man is doing well. Because Ant-Man's pretty weird. You know, if you just take, like, as a concept, he's kind of a weird dude. However, Ant-Man is doing well because this, I think the movie itself is pretty good. I think it's a really good movie. I have some problems with it. I think that it has a few minority characters, and they're literally all criminals.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things that, I was talking to one of the regulars at Gaming Grounds, one of our regular customers there, and he was saying one of the main reasons he liked Ant-Man was because the character wasn't, you know, any kind of a good person beforehand. Like, he was a thief. When I say any kind of a good person, he wasn't like, you know, Captain America was a soldier. Iron Man was looking to help the world, all this other stuff. And yeah, this character starts out as a thief.
But I know you haven't seen it, but he was literally a thief because the corporation that he worked for stole people's money, and he's broke in and gave it back to them.
So he's Robin Hooding this one.
He is Robin Hooding this one. Gotcha. So he's arguably better than Iron Man, who was an arms dealer before he became Iron Man. he has some friends that were like his, or he has a friend that was like his cellmate who picked him up, and he is the breakout character in that movie. He is hilarious and really funny. And he's played. Have you seen Fury, the movie, Jesse, with the tank movie?
No.
Okay. Well, he's in that movie. He's a Latin guy. I have to look up his name probably. But and then there's also an African American who is in his little group, and then like a Russian guy, and they're all criminals, and everybody else in the movie is white. So
awesome.
That was a little uncomfortable because I was like, oh, so the only people who are minorities in this movie are criminals, but they're not like bad characters. So there is that. Also, like Evangeline Lilly's Hope was kind of, did you see Jurassic World this
year?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you know how in Jurassic World, Bryce Dallas Howard's character was kind of like a stereotype cliche of like the like, was it frigid businesswoman is what they say?
Yeah, that works.
Like, She doesn't have time for anybody, but then she proves to be inept, and then the kind of like wild man like eventually wins her over. Evangeline Lilly was kind of that same character, down to the same haircut, and I don't think that's her fault. I think that's just the way they wanted her to play it, but she kind of got the shaft in that movie a little bit. But I know I'm saying why Ant-Man's not. I'm crapping on Ant-Man for a second, but it really is a very fun movie, and I think the reason why this movie does well and that other Marvel movies do well is they've really gotten the shared universe. It means that people are like super into Marvel now. It's like if you've had these people see like 8 to 10 of your movies or something at this point, and they're just roped in, you know, you got them.
Right. Like all you have to do is say like this happens in the Marvel movie verse that you've been watching, and people are like, okay.
Right, as long as it's not like a complete shit show. People are like, well, I guess I'm going to watch it. I mean, Guardians proved that, right? Nobody had heard of Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, I had not read a Guardians of the Galaxy comic at that point. I had heard of them because when I started getting into comics, Annihilation was big, and Guardians spun out of that. And I was like, oh, it does look kind of cool, but it just wasn't on my radar. I've since read a lot of Guardians, and it is really good. But, like, it's weird. Like, Guardians is kind of weird, and it's not something you grew up with. And it exploded, and it was basically proving that Marvel can't screw up. But Marvel recently has even figured out how to kind of do subgenres within their superhero movies. Like, Guardians is definitely a science fiction movie. Not to say the rest of these aren't kind of science fiction-y, but it's like space opera. Like, it's got kind of a Star Wars vibe.
Agreed. Yeah.
Agreed. And Captain America Winter Soldier, that's kind of like a spy movie. It's got a little bit of a Jason Bourne thing going on.
Definitely.
Definitely. This is kind of the Ocean's 11 or like your Italian Job movie. It's all about the heist. And it does the heist bit pretty passably. And I think it's popular because, well, it's got Paul Rudd. He's funny. And it's funny. It's lighthearted in the spaces you want it to be lighthearted. It's serious when you want it to be serious. Like, it's like a solid flick. So it's kind of got that subgenre down, and you know, it's another Marvel success. I don't know if they've really come out with a movie I'd consider bad since they started. I mean, there's some I like less than others, but I don't think anything's like a giant train wreck.
That's pretty true. Cause even like, I wasn't a huge fan of Iron Man 2 or 3. They weren't like bad movies, but like, whenever I'm, you know, used to the quality that I've been receiving up to that point, like, it was a little bit of a letdown, I guess. But it's one of those things, like, if I separate that out, like, you know, with how good Avengers was and, like, Winter Soldier and some of the other, like, really, really good movies, if I stop trying to compare it to or set it to that scale, they're still okay.
Right. It is tough because, like, Avengers should have been terrible, but it was awesome.
Oh, man, Avengers is so good. Both of the Avengers movies were really good. I enjoyed both of them.
Yeah, I enjoyed them. So I think that's why Ant-Man's doing well. I wouldn't say it's not piggybacking a little bit off of the success of other movies because it's very much in the universe. But that's just what you get with a Marvel movie now. Like, there's not going to be a standalone Marvel movie. It's just not going to happen.
Right. It's all tied together in some way. Like, even Daredevil was talking about, you know, the Manhattan incident and all that good stuff.
Right. Everything's going to be tied in, and it's going to be more and more tied in as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, I still need to see that movie. Speaking of other movies that I need to see but really don't want to.
Do we need to see it, Jesse? I think we do because we're comic book podcasters, and I don't think we'd be doing our job if we didn't see it.
Right. It's one of those things, like, you know, how you spent your last hour. Well, we also need to spend a couple of hours doing this. We can do this as a twofer. Jonathan Atwood and Paul Murphy both ask about Fantastic Four movie. Jonathan wants to know what it is going to do to the Fantastic Four in comics. And then Paul Murphy wants to know, do we think it is right for Marvel to cancel Fantastic Four?
Right. So the movie's apparently terrible, right? Like, it's got like what, a 6 to 8% on the tomato meter.
Yes.
It is the worst reviewed movie that's even based on a Marvel property.
Yes.
Ever.
It's actually, a lot of people are saying this makes bat nipples look good.
Right. No, this is like Catwoman territory.
Yeah. Like, and Ghost Rider, or even the Ghost Rider sequel, which I can never remember what it's called, but...
I didn't even watch it. Spirit of Vengeance, it is a standalone sequel. It has a 17% on the tomato meter, which is, I think, twice that of Fantastic Four.
Yes. So, people, now, the sequel to Ghost Rider, those of you that have had the misfortune of having to view that movie... This is worse than that one, apparently. So if you haven't seen Fantastic Four, I wouldn't recommend going to see it. Just let it die. We'll do it for you, and we'll let you know exactly how awful it is and why. Just, you know, sometime, like, when Werenberg is doing $5 movies or something like that, I'll try and check it out. Or I may just check out Less Legal Methods. We'll see.
I got some cheap drive-ins. I could probably just go to one of those.
That'll work. So we actually did talk a little bit about the whole Fantastic Four and All New, All Different. Paul goes on to say, rumor is the publisher ordered this since they don't own the film rights. Because as we discussed in the All New, All Different show, Fantastic Four is not getting its own book. They've split up. The Thing is going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy. Torch is going to hang out with the Inhumans. There is nothing about Sue Storm or Reed Richards in the upcoming Marvel Universe. So that leads to, you know, we speculate that they're both dead. We'll see how that goes. And actually, Chris, you had something else about that, like furthering that speculation.
Oh, that they're both. So there was a recent interview with Axel Alonso, who's the editor-in-chief in Marvel. And the interviewer, I believe it was Comic Book Resources, the interviewer was asking, like, hey, I don't see... So, was it Human Torch is in Uncanny Inhumans, it looks like, and yes. The Thing is on the Guardians of the Galaxy, but it was talking about where Sue and Reed were, and Axel basically said, I can't tell you that until Secret Wars is done. So something's going to happen to them. Don't know if they're going to get their own book, because they still haven't announced all the all-new, all-different books. They've announced a lot of them, but not all of them. And supposedly... They're staggering the releases of the all-new, all-different Marvel. It's starting in October, but it's going to be October, November, December, and even into January for those number ones. So, fingers crossed there's still going to be a Fantastic Four book, because I actually very recently got super into the Fantastic Four and then realized what a shitty time it was to get into Fantastic Four.
Yeah, because see, I don't think with Jonathan's question, I don't think that the Fantastic Four movie would hurt the comic books. Like, if they release a bad movie, I don't think it would matter, because so far the movies have only created interest in the comic book versus like, nobody's watched a movie and decided, well, I'm not going to read the comic book anymore. Those people that are reading the comic book would see the movie and like, oh god, what a shit show, I'm going to go back to my much better comic books. And those that aren't reading the comic books are going to see the movie. Oh my god, what a shit show. I don't really want to check out the comics. And you just net zero gain there.
Right. I don't think it's going to suddenly be... If anything, Marvel might be like, oh, they can't make a movie worth a shit anyway, so we might as well make whatever comics we want. I think... So the Fantastic Four books don't typically sell super well, but they have like a super dedicated fan base of people who have loved the Fantastic Four forever, because it is the very first Marvel comic. I don't think the movie is gonna, like, I don't think Marvel's gonna be like, well, can't make a comic now, the movie didn't do well, because clearly they don't seem to give a crap what happens in the movie since they don't own the rights to them. So I'm gonna agree with you, I don't think it's gonna affect it one way or the other.
Yeah, but we have speculated that the reason there's no Fantastic Four book is because they don't own the film rights. And that was the same thing with what they were rumoring to do with the X-Men, just kind of send them off on their own planet and focus more on the Inhumans. Though, and that goes back to, I guess, Paul's question there. And I guess to answer your question, Marvel hasn't outright canceled Fantastic Four. There may still be a Fantastic Four book. I don't think that they would be right in canceling it because they don't have the film rights. And I said the same thing with the X-Men. Like, if they put the X-Men on their own planet to be separate from the rest of the Marvel Universe, I think that'd be a horrible mistake.
Well, I think it's pretty clear at that point. At this point, they're probably not going to do that.
Yeah. No, that's that has been completely... Yeah, that's disproven just in the initial lineup of All New, All Different. We know for a fact that's not happening.
I mean, the all-new X-Men are cruising around in a Volkswagen, and I don't think they're going to do that on X-Planet.
Very unlikely, yeah. So, yeah, we're good there. So, basically, my opinion stays the same. Like, that would have been a mistake, and they didn't do it, and I'm glad. And same thing with canceling Fantastic Four would be a mistake. Hopefully they won't do it, But yeah, we haven't seen a book yet, so I don't know.
I mean, I could see it because it does not sell well. I would just be kind of sad about it because I think like Marvel hasn't had the best track record for PR recently, and I don't think this would be, I don't think this would make them any new fans, and it would probably alienate some of their diehards. So let's hope that maybe in January we get maybe even like a Fantastic Two or something.
Or I mean, you could have temporary new members. It wouldn't be the first time.
Oh, that, definitely not.
Yeah, far from the first time the Fantastic Four has been Reed, Sue, and random other members.
Right. Yeah. It is a shame that they can't do these movies right. I just think they approach it wrong. What I would really like to see, Jesse, is like a period movie. So like it takes place in the 60s and it's Fantastic Four.
That would be awesome.
I know. I think it'd be the best way to do it. Because was it they got their powers by blasting off into space? But no, like barely anybody had been to space before, so it made sense. So that's why now they're like they're going into another dimension and they're getting their powers because they're like, well, obviously they're not going to get hit by weird cosmic rays in space. But they could do like I think it'd be cool if they were like, oh, we're going into space. Oh no, it's still cosmic rays. Even though we know more about space, this is screw you. This is Marvel, and we're just going to be silly. Because why shouldn't they be silly? There's been a movie with the raccoon who shoots guns.
That's true. It was a raccoon that was a genetic experiment that was delightful. I love me some Rocket Raccoon
and a talking tree friend. I don't think silly is a good excuse anymore.
Right, and not just talking, but dancing.
He does dance. That is true. talking, dancing, not in a circus.
Yeah, and we've also discussed that the only reason this movie happened in the first place is because Fox was about to lose the rights to Fantastic Four and it was going to go back to Marvel.
Right.
So, that's the only reason they shat this thing out was basically so they could keep the rights. I really, really hope, since this tanked so horribly, that Fox will finally come to some kind of deal with Marvel just to like, Marvel, please give us some of that massive mountain of money you're sitting on for the rights to this. And I don't know, we'll let you use the X-Men or something, like anything.
It was, well, it's funny. Like Sony had a deal with Marvel and Amazing Spider-Man 2 was still a financial success.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't super good, but it was a financial success. Fantastic Four hasn't even made its money back yet.
Right. Yeah. No, this is a huge flop for Fox. Like they're out several million dollars. Last I looked,
tens of millions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a bunch. I mean, they might eventually make it back, but they're out a buttload of money. For this.
And they don't do they have merchandising rights? Like does Fox have that on Fantastic Four?
Merchandising rights, I believe.
But I mean, nobody's gonna buy toys for that shitty movie.
Should do Fantastic Four toys?
little black Johnny Storm.
Right. Not to say that I don't. I actually think that was probably apparently Michael B. Jordan's the best part of that movie.
I believe that. I love Michael B. Jordan.
I know
he's awesome.
He is awesome, and I'm like cool. I was perfectly fine with him being Johnny Storm. That it's funny that people were mad about that, and I'm sure those same people didn't end up seeing it anyway. Yeah, I just don't. That's so sad because. I don't know what they're gonna do with it, but it's. Bleh.
It's yeah, I did actually. I remember when I heard that announcement, like, oh, they're making Johnny Black, so I guess he's going to be adopted? Sure. And they're like, oh, it's Michael B. Anthony. I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, actually, Sue's Jordan, the one. Yeah. Sue's adopted.
Sue's adopted?
Sue's the one who's adopted.
I thought it was Johnny.
Nope. Yeah, because, you know, the scientist who's talking and is like, this is Reed Richards.
Yeah.
In the trailer. That's... Dr. Storm. That's the dad.
Oh.
And they adopted. What's funny though is Michael B. Jordan and Kate Mara get these questions a lot about how can you two be siblings? And people won't ask him about the movie. They'll literally just ask about the how you guys aren't the same skin color. How can you be siblings? And so they have to address that a lot, but they get the question like multiple times. So it gets a little silly. It gets just a little bit silly, but I don't know. We'll still see it because we hate ourselves. We have to for the listeners, Jesse,
for the listeners. And Michael B. Jordan. I'll have to see it for that. Just like I'm going to see Creed, but actually Creed looks really good. Anyway,
I think that does that wrap up our questions?
I think so. If not, feel free to comment and yell at us and we'll get it next time. I promise. We're really sorry if we skipped it.
So we love answering your questions. So give us more.
We do. We have so much fun with it. So I think the first thing we're going to do for the actual part of the show, while I was having fun in Austin, Texas at the Rooster Teeth Expo, which is completely unrelated to comics, Chris was in a much more relevant convention. Go ahead, Chris.
I was at the first annual Kansas City Comic Convention, and I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about myself. I found out the great Neil Adams was going to be there, and figured this was going to be the only time I'd be able to get something from Neil Adams. So I got a sweet Cyclops commission from Neil Adams. We'll have to maybe post it in the show notes or as the thumbnail for the podcast, because it is so cool. So it wasn't a print, like it was an original art, and went and picked it up and got to talk with him. I talked with him about, he did an interview with Kevin Smith on Kevin Smith's Batman on Batman podcast, and I listened to the whole thing of that. And the coolest thing I think about Neil Adams for you uninitiated folks. So Neil Adams was a guy who illustrated Batman for a while, did some of the best Batman stuff that has ever been done. He also did the Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Hard Traveling Heroes title, which that was the time where Green Arrow finds out that his ward Speedy is using heroin. And there's that cover with the, my ward Speedy is a junkie. He did that whole series. It was a lot about social issues. He also did, sadly, he did the X-Men right before it was canceled. But it was not his fault, because that was some of the best X-Men art I've ever seen. So because I love the way he drew Cyclops, I was asking him to draw me a Cyclops. And he did. I got a bust of Cyclops, and he drew Cyclops with the visor like on full blast, with the little Kirby dots around the blast, and it just looked excellent. And I wish I had more pictures, but I that baby's getting framed like immediately. But I talked with him a little bit about his, the history. He got Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, the creators of Superman, kind of a little more money from DC, since DC was milking their creation but not actually paying them for it after a certain amount of time. And now that this is why they're credited on everything. Like in every episode of Smallville, it would say Superman created by Joe Shuster and Jerry Siegel. Joe Shuster? Oh, I might be messing that up. Jerry Siegel. Yeah, okay, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Woof. Whoops. And so that was really cool. Talked to them about that. I picked up a few issues of X-Factor from the 80s. Because X-Factor is not on Marvel Unlimited, and so I wanted to get a few of those. That's where Apocalypse was introduced, Jesse.
Yay, Apocalypse.
The funny thing is, I kept trying to ask people about X-Factor, and they're like, I got number 6. Number 6 is the first appearance of Apocalypse, and it goes for around, you know, $60 to $60+. And I was like, well, that's the only one I have. Which is true. I picked it up at comic strip about, it would have been like 2009, 2008. Yeah, I picked it up a comic strip, and he was like, hey, you, Chris, I know you like the X-Men. Do you want this first appearance of Apocalypse? I'm like, well, for how much? And he's like, Andrew was like, I don't know, like $7. And I'm like, sure, I'll buy it for $7.
Deal.
And yeah, deal. And that was worth way more than that because of the Apocalypse movie. So I got some other X-Factor stuff. I also got to talk with two of my Kansas City creator favorites, Jason Aaron and Dennis Hopeless. Now, I ended up in the Kansas City paper because they were taking pictures at the time I was talking to Jason Aaron. But I got a lot of stuff signed because I figured out that I get everything by Jason Aaron. I got my Star Wars signed. I got my Thor signed. I got my Thor's plural signed. I got my two trades of Southern Bastards signed, one of which he dedicated to, he put to Chris, glad we looked good in the paper. I know, I was pretty happy about that. I also attended a panel that he was running about Star Wars comics. And I asked him a question that I thought was a pretty good one, Jesse. I talked about how in Star Wars comics, you have to sort of throw some fan service in there. Like, you got to put a little, I have a bad feeling about this at some right. point in time. And I asked him how he balanced that with the fact that you have to, like, can't do that all the time. And he said that he was actually really bad about that. And editorial asked him to stop. Like, he still does it a little bit, but at one point, what was it? Leia says, I hate you to Han, and Han says, I know, and he had to change it to something else.
that's just a great little thing to throw at the fans, though.
Well, then I mean, that's what he said. He's like, I don't consider it fan service. It's part of the series. You know, there's only, like, of that original trilogy, because Star Wars takes place between, the Star Wars comic, the new Marvel comic, takes place between episode 4 and 5. And so it's basically based off of, what, like, 6 hours of film?
Right.
And so, you know, you got to throw that in there. It's like, it's language that's used. And so I really like that response of his. But they talked about some of the upcoming stuff. Did you know, Jesse, that in October, I believe, Greg Rucka is writing the very first new canon comic adaptation of post Return of the Jedi?
Really?
Yeah, it is the longest damn name ever. Because it's also part of something else. What is it? Is it called Shattered Empire? So it's like Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Shattered Empire, #1.
Good Lord.
Right. I think the Journey to Force Awakens, they're just going to put in like a sub caption. It's just going to be called, it's just going to have Star Wars Shattered Empire #1. Thank God, because that's the longest damn name ever. But there's a whole, like, Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, that's in novels and stuff, too. You know Star Wars. It's a massive franchise, and they'll never... I mean, now that Disney owns it, it's never going to stop. We're going to Star Wars movies till we're dead.
It's really true, and beyond. Did you know there's still... Well, okay. I'm going to stop myself there, because last time I said this about Land Before Time and Disney, I was corrected, because Land Before Time is not Disney.
Land Before Time is not Disney, but there are also 15 million Land Before Time films.
Accurate. But anyway. yeah, I am kind of sad that they completely scrapped the whole NJO thing, because I really, really liked NJO.
I really liked Legacy, that comic series. I mean, but I guess, Jesse, like, if you like NJO, NJO's, you know, it's there, Jesse. It's there in our hearts.
It's true. And, yeah, I mean... I hear it did kind of go downhill. I only read like the first, I think, 5 or 6 books, and I liked what I read. But yeah, yeah. Anyway, yeah, go ahead. Back to Comic Con.
Back to Comic Con. So I thought that was really cool. It was funny. Jason Aaron actually didn't know when it was coming out, and I'm like, I think it's coming out in September, and he's like, that guy knows.
That guy knows.
I'm kind of excited about it. It's a 4-issue mini, I believe. Just about what's happening post Return of the Jedi, and Greg Rucka write some good stuff, so I'm pretty excited about that. I mean, I'm so excited about Star Wars, and I really like that Marvel got the franchise. I don't, like, the Dark Horse ones were good, but it's really cool to get some comics about, you know, our, like, the classic characters. Because Dark Horse did those for a while, but then I think, like, people got kind of tired of it. But I am not tired of these Marvel ones yet. They're pretty good. The Darth Vader one is really, really good, and I need to catch up with that one too. I also talked with Dennis Hopeless, who is also from Kansas City. Dennis Hopeless is the writer of Spider-Woman. He is also going to be writing the upcoming all new X-Men, which we figured out, was it this past week, that Edie and Evan Sabanur are going to be characters on Genesis, right. Which I like, because I like Genesis. Apparently recently he hasn't been done super well. I didn't read Axis, but apparently Axis was kind of a Genesis shit show. But I really liked him in Wolverine and the X-Men and Uncanny X-Force. And I love that he's a wholesome kid that looks like Apocalypse. I think that's kind of a neat concept. And I like Edie too.
I always like the first appearance. Whenever I think of like Genesis as a little kid, I don't know why, like, that picture cracks me up.
Oh, it's great. Like, when he's sitting in class and he's just like, he's got like the weird Apocalypse mouth and all the kids are like, yes. Is that like Apocalypse?
Does
like,
anybody else think that kid looks like Apocalypse?
Reading in Genesis is like, I don't know why everyone's staring at me. He also makes, he's like from Kansas in his mind. And he makes a lot of Kansas, Missouri jokes, which is pretty relevant for if you live in Kansas City. So, you know, Jesse, how Illinois is the maligned. Like, if you live on the Missouri side, Illinois is maligned. Illinois drivers are terrible. You know, that sort of deal.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's completely accurate.
Right. Up here, it's Kansas is trash. But if you live on the Kansas side, Missouri's trash. And I'm sure Illinois, it's vice versa.
Well, no, I mean, have you ever talked to anybody from Illinois? They agree that it is a shit show across the river.
Well, at least near Cape, it is. There's just nothing there. There's just not a damn thing.
That's pretty true. And I say this hoping that most of the cast of PZ85 doesn't listen to that part, at least, because most of them are from that part of Illinois.
Are they all from Illinois?
Well, Shannon, Tanner, Zach, CJ, and a couple of other people are all from Illinois.
I mean, they don't live there now, though, right?
2 out of 4.
That's rough. That's funny, but so that's, I like Genesis for that reason. I like Edie. I think Edie is kind of a bit of a rehash of the I have power so I'm evil, which was done in New Mutants in the 80s, but I mean, it's, I think it's nice to be able to shake to get that occasionally, so I like Edie. But I asked Dennis Hopeless because Dennis Hopeless wrote X-Men season 1, which is believed by some, he did that with Jamie McKelvey on art, but is believed by some to be like the best interpretation of X-Men Silver Age. And it's good. I have it. It is really good. I forgot to bring it to have him sign. But I asked him, I was like, I want to just pretend that this is just a continuation of that. Because it's the same characters, right? It's the, because X-Men season 1 is the original 4 X-Men. And then all new is the original 4 minus Jean Grey. And then plus Wolverine, or X-23 Wolverine, Edie, and Genesis. And was it Dennis Hopeless told me that he apparently begged Jeff Lemire to be able to use Jean Grey? Because you know Jean Grey is an extraordinary X-Men, right?
Right.
And he was like, please, can I please use Jean Grey? Which I get, because in X-Men Season 1, Jean Grey is the main character. Like, it's all from her point of view. And so, right. Like, Dennis Hopeless can write him some Jean Grey. He's like, please? And Jeff's like, oh, maybe. But we also talked about Spider-Woman, because he's going to be writing Spider-Woman, and Spider-Woman's going to be pregnant in the fall. And he talked about how he has two major detractors for that. One of them is, like, the dude bro audience who's like, ugh, pregnant woman, I don't want to read this. Like, because a lot of people think Dennis Hopeless has changed Spider-Woman for the worse. I think Spider-Woman's great, and I love reading it every single month it comes out. It is delightful. But then apparently the other detractors are like early 20s like feminists. I identify myself as a feminist, so I'm going to choose my language pretty carefully here. Who think that relegating her to a pregnancy storyline is sexist. But some like there's been like older feminists, like there was an article on the Mary Sue, who think that like motherhood is something essentially feminine. I mean, it kind of is, right?
And that's it's not pretty exclusive to that.
Pretty exclusive, unless you're Arnold Schwarzenegger. right. And literally the term motherhood is exclusively feminine. Even if you're two women raising a child, you're both mothers, and that's motherhood. So they think that that it's great because it's like it doesn't happen much with superheroes. So we talked with him about that, because Christy, my wife, very recently had a baby, we had a child, and during her pregnancy, she thought that all the representation of pregnant women in media was really shitty, because they were basically like just there to be pregnant. And everything was about them being pregnant. They're like, oh, my back hurts. Or I'm really hungry. I'm eating for two. Like, and they never got like anything else. But, you know, she was still living her life while being pregnant. She still had to teach. Like, she wasn't thinking about being pregnant every moment of every day. So she's really excited about a pregnant superhero. fighting crime while pregnant, because she feels that a lot of like pregnancy in fiction is just there to be pregnancy. So we talked about that. So we were pretty excited about that. Trying to think of who else was there. I tried to pick up for Christy the first appearance of Spider-Woman, Jessica Drew. Nope, it was like $100, and I was like, oh, already spent plenty. It was in really good shape, but I was like, already spent plenty on my Cyclops, so let's not get that. Shout out to my artist friend from Kansas City, Eric Lundy, who is there. He is like as homegrown Kansas City artist as you can get. Like, he didn't live in Kansas City forever, but he's like local talent. He's writing a comic currently called Restaurant at the End of the World, which is about people hunting unicorns for meat. They run a food truck and it's pretty delightful. Saw him there, got a couple prints from him, so it was nice to see him. I met him at a party once upon a time, Jesse, and I was like, what do you do? He's like, oh, I write and draw comics. And I was like, oh, we should talk. Who else was there? Terry Moore was there. That's one of the co-creators of The Walking Dead. He did the first 6 issues on art, so that's pretty cool. I didn't get anything from him. I should have. I even forgot my Walking Dead trade. Wasn't that silly, Jesse? Wasn't I a silly guy?
That is really, really silly. I mean, are you missing out on a great autograph right there?
I know. The co-creator of Rogue was there, and I'm trying to remember his name. I am sounding like a really bad comic book fan. Michael Golden. There we go. Michael Golden was the co-creator of Rogue. Jim Shooter was supposedly there. He was the editor-in-chief in Marvel for a long time, but I didn't see him. And he did Secret Wars, the first Secret Wars, which is not good. So I didn't really care about that. But the artist who created the Black Spider-Man costume was there.
Ooh, that's one of my favorite Spider-Man costumes of all time.
That is one of my favorite Spider-Man costumes. But that particular issue goes for de buttloads of money.
I believe that.
So I think he had prints, and I maybe could have gotten a print, which would have been pretty cool. But I was just like, oh my God, I really wish I had this issue of Secret Wars, but it's the most expensive one. And then I picked up a couple trades, picked up Sex Criminals Volume 2, picked up Southern Bastards Volume 2 to get Jason Aaron to sign it. Southern Bastards has been really, really good. It was a really fun weekend, though. I went all 3 days, which I usually don't do, but I just had a lot of fun, and it was neat to get out of the house for a little while. So that's kind of my Comic-Con report. I didn't really see any of the celebrities. Sean Astin was there, so that's kind of cool if you like Lord of the Rings.
Who doesn't like Lord of the Rings?
I don't know. I've met people who haven't seen Lord of the Rings, but I haven't met anybody who doesn't like Lord of the Rings. Also, Manu Bennett was there. If you do you watch Arrow, Jesse?
Yeah.
He played Deathstroke.
Yeah, there was actually, what was the convention? There was one recently. I don't think it was straight up. Maybe it was actually Comic-Con, but there was one that had like the entire cast of the Arrow.
That's probably San Diego Comic-Con. Yeah. But Manu Bennett had a pretty long line. This was the first year of Kansas City Comic-Con, so it wasn't super huge, which was neat because I didn't get like bumped all the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, like, it sounds like you had a, you know, really good turnout, guest wise and, you know, representation wise for it being the first one.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't help that two like really big Marvel creators live in Kansas City right now. So if they show up, you usually have like some pretty cool stuff going on. But yeah, we did. I mean, we had some good creators. I had a really fun time. I don't think they didn't have a map. That kind of sucked. So I just remember where stuff was.
That's always rough. Was it at least like in one building?
It was all in one building. It was in Bartle Hall, which is the big convention center. And it was in a grid, so I could at least kind of keep the grid down. But I could have used a map of the grid. That would have been helpful. Otherwise, right. I had a really good time. The next Comic-Con in Kansas City is Planet Comic-Con, which I'm sure is like next March or something. That's usually the bigger one. But yeah, this was a lot of fun.
Very good. I'm glad you had a good time. I mean, it always sucks to go to a convention and it just be, you know, boring.
Because
it ends up being a big waste of money. Yeah, exactly. Because I remember, I've gotten pretty lucky. Every con I've gone to, with the exception of there was one year I went to Anime STL and NatsuCon, and I know this is a little bit of a tangent, but we don't really have any time to talk about any real topics, so deal with it. I went to NatsuCon and Anime STL in the same year. Now, what I didn't know was that they are effectively the same convention. And by effectively, I mean they had near identical panels. They were in the same buildings, like same convention center in, I think, Collinsville, Illinois, I want to say. Yeah, same panels, same exhibitors, same like booths to sell stuff. So I was really upset that I basically wasted a second Saturday to go to the second convention. And that's my one unfortunate con story.
I'm so sorry, Jesse. That sounds terrible.
Yeah, it was a whole group of us. We drove up there, went to that one, and most of us had also gone to the previous ones. So we're just like, really? Why didn't we research this? Why did we just decide to come up here?
Oh, that does sound terrible.
It was really unfortunate, but again, my good con going experiences have really outweighed that one. Particularly, like RTX, I think, is probably the biggest convention I've ever been to. Which is, I mean, I've been to some big ones, like went to Anime Central in Chicago, Illinois. And yeah, this was even bigger than that somehow.
The biggest one I've been to was, it was just called Chicago Comic Con at the time. And there were some big names there. I mean, it's like the biggest one in the center of the country for sure. So that one was fun. So I have some stories about that at some point. Yeah, so it was definitely good times.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you had a good time. I'm glad you got some prints. And I was actually going to ask your permission about using that print for the thumbnail, because that was my plan. So I'm glad you suggested it, because I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I would love to show it off, so definitely do that.
All right, I currently have the one you have on your Facebook saved. If you want a different one, just send me a picture.
I don't have a different one, and it's currently at the Framer, so that one we'll have to do.
All right. Well, guys, I think that's going to do it. We're right at about an hour. We don't want to, take up too much of your time. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. Again, hopefully we answered your questions. If you guys have any more, or if you're unhappy with them, let us know in the comments. We'll address it next week.
Yeah, I enjoyed talking with you this week, Jesse. We had some pretty good questions, a lot of good stuff to talk about.
Agreed. And yeah, convention sounds like it was awesome. This picture is really awesome. I can't wait to show it to you guys in the thumbnail for those of you that aren't friends with Chris on Facebook. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Have a good night.